Well, happy Thursday. Hope you have had a good week thus far. Good weekend upcoming, and you are in tune with yet another edition of Perspectives on WFSU. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for tuning our way on the radio. You are also always welcome to be part of the conversation wherever that might lead. Telephonically, 850-414-1234 is the number. If you're old-fashioned and you've got a landline and you are long distance from you to us, it's 800-926-8809. Email perspectives at WFSU.org. And we also have a Twitter account, don't we all, at WFSU Perspective. As we said in the outset, just in case you didn't hear that, we had Mother's Day last month. We're coming up on Dad's Day. And betwixt and between, parents are in a modern-day quandary because the advice is coming from everywhere. And some of it is kind of contradictory. And so as parents, particularly parents of the very littlest kids, sometimes you're wondering, what direction to go? What is helpful? What is harmful? What resources are available? Where do I turn for good, solid information? And what does the latest research say? Well, we kind of, with the help of Jack Levine, an old pal of ours, we concocted a terrific panel to address some of those issues and also to respond to any questions or concerns that you have today as the program progresses. So let's say hi to some folks. First, from Capital Area Healthy Start Coalition, Tamika Smith, who is Executive Director of SAME. Tamika, so good to see
you. You too, Tom. Thank you for having us.
You also brought the President of the Board of Directors.
We
are so happy Glenn Robertson's here. Hey, Glenn. Oh,
thank you very much. It's great to be here, Tom. I'm a grandfather and a father, so I've had a little experience in this subject area.
Okay. So we can get sort of a double perspective from you then. We're going to have to pay you double, too.
Oh, that's great to hear.
Now, adding to this conversation, now you heard this lady on not too terribly long ago in the run-up to that fantastic mental health coalescence that was over at the North Florida Fairgrounds, and that is Dr. Fran Close, full professor of behavioral science and health education in the Institute of Public Health in the College of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences at Florida A&M University, and her business card is about an 8.5 by 11.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
It's so good to see you again, Fran. Now, you're also a former Healthy Start board member and coming back on the board this year, I hear.
Yes, that's what I hear too, Tom. Thank you. I'm so glad to return. It's really a passion of mine, and this way I can somehow bring my passion to the board and work hard with them.
Well, let's get into some passionate discussion here of the research, Fran, because we all know that the earliest days are the most important, and you bring that new baby home and you're thinking, oh my gosh, it's once you get the blue or pink debate finished, and a lot of folks have blown that off, of course, then how should they sleep? What should they eat? You may get some stuff from the pediatrician, but still you have questions galore. But still in the back of your head, you're thinking, this is very, very big stuff. And what if I screw up? And what does the research say? Now, how important are those first days, months, certainly years?
They are extremely important. So the education of the parents, mom and dad, and any caregivers is going to be very, very important, especially things like the decision to breastfeed. That's very important to make sure that they understand they've had lactation consultation and things like that. It's very important that moms and dad understand how that's done and the importance of doing it. And most important, and the things that we've done on the board a lot, is sleep. Making sure that moms and dad know that where the baby should sleep. And it's not with them. It's in a bed of their own. And nothing, no bumpers, no fashionable things that we see in the with the stars and everybody showing off their pink and blue rooms. It's not about that. It's about having the baby there on a firm mattress with nothing but themselves there. And I think a lot of people don't really understand the importance of sleep because we do have an issue, and you're asking about the research with SIDS and SUID, because there's a lot of times that you don't know why babies are not waking up, and that's very sad for a new family if they go and, see that their baby is not well. And we know that with the research, those babies that are breastfed tend to not have those issues as well.
Okay, well, you talked about SIDS, the sudden infant death syndrome type of thing. Tamika Smith, this has been a bugaboo bear of Capital Area Healthy Start since forever. What do the latest stats say? How many of these precious young lives just suddenly evaporate and no one seems to know why?
You're very correct, Tom, in that. And in 2017 for Leon County, we had 35 deaths in Leon County of infants. Four of those were sleep-related. And so we know from our FEMR process, which is the Fetal Infant Mortality Review process, where we have staff that look at and de-identify all the cases of babies who die in Leon, Wakulla. We also work for Jefferson, Madison, and Taylor. We present those cases on a monthly basis. They meet today, actually, at TMH. It's a panel of experts, doctors, pediatricians, folks from the medical examiner's office, social workers, Department of Children and Families. We bring them together in a room, and we look at the cases of those infants who we have lost, and we say, what could we have done as a community to save this baby? And from that data, we have found that we have a number, four from 2017, sleep-related deaths. And you can just imagine the tragedy that that is for the family that has to lose a baby. Any loss is detrimental, and it's hard for a family. But we see the co-sleeping deaths as well. And so we've tried to build initiatives from that case review team and from our citizens who weigh in on things that we could do to make that situation better in the future. We put forth initiatives like our traveling crib. That's a crib, a mobile crib that we take. Right now it's at the Leon County Library. But that crib is an example of how the baby should sleep. So it's a crib, a small crib. There's a baby doll inside that has a T-shirt on that says "This Side Up." And there's a banner that travels with it that says that the baby should be alone on their back without all the pretty fluffy things, the pillows, the blankets, the bumper pads, and by themselves on a firm mattress, as Fran said. So we have that crib, and it's traveling across the community. So it's in different places. We wanted to put it in businesses because, as Fran said, it's not just the mom and the dad that need the education. Like Glenn, it's the grandparents, because grandparents might keep baby for a date night and need to know that the babies need to be alone in their own place to sleep. So we're getting that information out to grandparents, to business owners, to community people, so that everybody gets the message that babies need to be alone.
Oh, my gosh. And Glenn, that seems almost counterintuitive, because as grandparents, and I is one too, you know, it is our prerogative to spoil, to bestow upon these beautiful little kids all kinds of goodies, and especially in the early days of infancy.
Right. Yeah. And one of the things, Tom, that enticed me to be on the board, I knew Governor Childs and his wife, Rhea, and they are the ones who started the Healthy Start program in 1992. And at that time, there were about 10 deaths per 1,000 live births, and that was extraordinary. And Governor Childs and the legislature put in place a program to deal with that. We're down now to about 5 deaths per 1,000 births. But being on the board, to me, is a very important part of giving back to the community, because we're here to understand what everything has been said here so far, but also to figure out what to do about it. You know, how can we have to have funds, there has to be resources to be able to go out and educate, to be able to create what I think is a great way to deal with this issue, and that is to have care coordinators who work with the pregnant women and the families. I would have loved to have had that when my wife of 52 years now and I had our first child, and then our second child, to have somebody there to give you good advice, because most of us, by the time we have our first one, we don't know a whole lot about what we're doing, as you kind of mentioned earlier. So I think being on the board and being part of this community by helping to raise funds and by helping to think through solutions to the issues that we just talked about is important, and I'm really happy to be part of this board.
Because the whole thing is education, and this is something that you do not find on the Sunshine State Standards Test.
Absolutely. Right. We'd love to have it. Maybe that's our next advocacy effort, is to get young people. And there are some coalitions across the state. So Healthy Start is statewide. But there are some coalitions across the state that are doing education with young people in the high schools around safe sleep so that they know when they become parents or they're babysitting that babies should be asleep by themselves in a crib.
Or a sibling, because you have so many high school or even middle school kids who are de facto parents because the real parents are working.
Right. Exactly.
That's right.
So we want to get that information and education out to them.
Yeah, how do you get that into the curriculum? It's got to be tough because there are so many other conflicting priorities that are bouncing around there.
Yeah, and I think we just don't take enough time. I have three girls myself, and two of them have gone at least through middle school, which I think is a crucial area for them to start learning a lot about, you know, caregiving or even about themselves. And I think that's also a place where we can start preconception care. And I think that word preconception may throw a lot of parents off. Mm-hmm. But we need to it pretty much is taking care of yourself, eating well, exercising, you know, good mental health, all of the things, just making yourself a full, whole person, you know, before you even think about, because most pregnancies are mistimed. I mean, they're not planned. So you're not thinking about having a baby. Well, you are thinking about doing well, you know, as far as eating, you know, having your vitamins, eating well. But we can start that in middle school, just telling girls and boys, because now we're involving the male in preconception care, because it's not all about the woman who's carrying the baby. It's about how healthy he is too at conception. It's important.
Yeah, and that is a sea change in approach. As
Absolutely.
Well, because it was always, okay, you know, this is for the girls. Now, you guys go, you know, shoot hoops or something. You know, we're going to talk about girl stuff now.
No. It's all about boy stuff.
You can shoot hoops and also get the education and eat well around all of that so that when the time is right and the time comes, you're ready to have a baby as well.
Absolutely.
Members of the Capital Area Healthy Start Coalition, Executive Director Tamika Smith and President of the Board, Glenn Robertson, here with us along with Dr. Fran Close from Florida A&M University, talking about early childhood development. And what was it like when you brought your first baby home? Any trepidation? Any fear? Any terror? Certainly wasn't my household. I remember that day. Why don't you share that with us here at 850-414-1234, our number for Perspectives, or shoot us an email if that's your preferred form of communication, perspectives@wfsu.org, and we shall be right back. Back on Perspectives. I wanted to mention something too, because we're putting this together at the same time. Next month, starting in July, the week of July 9th, we are going to get into our primary election Perspectives. So much fun that's going to be. As envisioned, now we're going to have 8 programs, which will be available not only on WFSU-FM, but also for FSU, delayed broadcast on the TV. So you can see the candidates and yours truly. And we'll also be doing some live streaming and all of that as well. So we'll be concentrating first on the Leon County Commission races, and then we're going into the Leon County School Board races, and then, there you go, Glenn, and then we'll get into the Tallahassee City Commission races, which are growing even as we speak. I don't know, we may have to go to President Thrasher and see if we can use the Civic Center for some of these, because, my gosh, everyone and sister's coming out to run for something here. So, anyway, we are back, though, on early childhood development. Maybe there's a link there. I don't know, guys. We'll figure that out with members of Capital Area Healthy Start Coalition and Dr. Fran Close from FAMU. When we were talking, though, about sudden infant death syndrome and some of the other problems that are here. What does the data say as far as all in low-income areas? Is there a racial component here? Is it just cultural? Can you say that certain folks seem to have more problems when it comes to infant mortality than others? Or is it just across the board and it's the luck of the draw? Tamika?
Very good question, Tom. Very good question. And what we find here in Leon County, as well as across the state and the United States of America, is that African-American women are more likely, 2 to 3 times as likely, to lose their babies than white women. In Leon County, for example, for 2016, white women had a 1.3 per thousand in terms of infant mortality rate. African-American women had 9.3. So that's 7 times the rate from white to African-American. So black women lose their babies more often. And we find that when you level for education and socioeconomic status, African-American women still tend to lose their babies more often than white women. And when you add issues around poverty, very tough living situations, that makes it even more detrimental. So, yes, there is a discrepancy. There is what we call a racial disparity in infant mortality. And I know Dr. Close has done a great deal of work over her years in this area, so I'd like to have her talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, racial disparity issues, as Tamika was saying, is the main focus with infant mortality, especially with what I've done over the years with black infant mortality. And as she said, it doesn't matter if you level off or if a woman has a high SES, if she's African American, she's more likely still to lose her baby. And, you know, over the years, we've done research to show that it could be related to stress, racial discrimination, you know, and those things that, you know, just she has access. But going to the doctor, just the interactions with her healthcare provider also may be a stressful situation. So all of those things combine. I mean, she has the means. However, she still may have issues with carrying the baby to term. And her baby still, as any other baby, a white baby that is coming into this world in a lower SES, her baby has a higher chance of being born too small and too soon.
Oh, gosh. So it goes beyond the, oh, you're doing something wrong, the blame the victim kind of thing. This is a very complex set of circumstances that are conspiring to create this then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And over the years, we've had grants. We looked at, say, a place like Hillsborough County. We compared it to Gaston County. We had a grant that was called REACH, Racial and Ethic Approaches to Community Health. And we focused. It was a grant that we received from the CDC. And we were looking at whether, like, Hillsborough County and Gaston County, was there a difference in that? And really, there were. There were some things like, you know, nutrition, things like pica. We're talking about culture barriers. Like, women were eating clay, eating detergent, things like that, things that they shared with us in focus groups because, one, they didn't realize if you're eating something that has no nutritional value, but grandma, someone told you that eating clay or eating cornstarch is something that you should be consuming. And it's funny how that those things are passed over and over in the African-American community. And that because if you have cornstarch, that you're going to have a better labor. Well, everybody has seen the babies when they first come out and there's this white, you know, it's Vernix, right? Everybody has that. But an old wives' tale says that's because I had that cornstarch. And so, hey, I'm going to have a better labor. So those things like that, you would think that, you know, it doesn't get passed down, but it does get passed down. And we still have women consuming those things. So there's a lot of unknown causes of why there is that racial disparity. But we're still working to find out what it is.
Yeah, and that can happen. I'm thinking, Glenn, I don't know if you would remember this or not. My grandmother, back in the mountains of Western Maryland, so it was more Beverly Hillbilly country than certainly a lot of places that we have down here. One of the palliatives that was used for all infants was whiskey. It was like the universal remedy for everything, for teething, right, for colds, for whatever. And so she kept that fifth of whatever it is, you know, old frothing slosh or whatever right there, because that's what you use for the youngins. And that takes care of everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it, in today's environment, you think, you know, you're creating an incipient alcoholic here.
Right.
You know, by everything that's wrong with the kid, you know, give him a shot.
You know? You're right.
So, you know, I think every culture kind of has its, dare I say, old wives' tales. That's a pejorative now, too.
Yeah.
But still, these myths.
These myths. Right.
That can be more harmful than useful.
Yeah. Tom, in responding to that, one of the reasons we have a board for the Healthy Start Coalition is to get that type of word out into the community as far as we can, as often as we can. And it's just important for the community to understand not only is the family affected, but so is the community affected. When we have low birth weight births, those type of births, for instance, on average, cost about $54,000 by the time that baby gets out of the hospital after a 10-day stay and after repeatedly going back to physicians' offices after that. It's very expensive for the community. It's about $5,000 for those of us who have a healthy birth in comparison. So the board has to be in a position to have its network of friends and businesses and associations and individuals who can help spread the word, like you said. When my wife and I started 52 years ago, we relied on the myths more than anything else. And it would be good to know today that we are in a position that we can spread a lot of education and do a lot of training to help this generation's young moms and dads and families have successful births.
Well, that's where Dr. Spock came along and came up with the comprehensive guide to early childhood. But the research has turned some of that on its ear, too, in recent years.
Mm-hmm. I just want to also just say about what Glenn said, you know, a community is based on its youngest people. I mean, the healthy, I guess to say that a community is healthy, it really is based on that 0 to 5 amount of people that's in that community. And, you know, the board has had a history of the education. When I was on the board 17, 18 years ago, and, you know, we continue to do that. We started as a racial, we had a racial disparity arm of the Capital Air Healthy Start. And that's how kind of I got involved with them. And we started doing things on one of the myths on douching. And that myth of douching. And I worked alongside Barbara Cottrell, who's a nurse over at Florida State University. And we actually looked at women and their reasons why. We did focus groups in Leon County and asked women, like, why are you doing this? And again, it's all myth-based. And again, we actually published that work in a journal here, I guess a few years ago too. So it's very important that we get just debunk those myths, and we have a reputation here on the board of educating, and I know we are going to continue to do that and do more in this community in the future.
Well, the numbers seem to indicate that it has been effective since
Absolutely.
You have had that continuing decrease in infant mortality here. But Tamika, it's still that education, the because this is how mom did it, and the way grandma did it, and her mother, and this is just the way it is, and y'all can't tell me anything different.
That is very true. That is very much the experience that many of our moms have. I think it's the experience that many moms just in general have. I remember bringing my first son home the day that he was born, and my grandmother was there. And I was waiting for my milk to come in. And so he was crying, and she was, we have to go to the grocery store and get some formula. This is not going to work. This breastfeeding, I applaud you for wanting to breastfeed, but this is not going to work because this baby needs to eat. And so there was a lot of pressure in that moment to do something other than what I had planned to do, which was to breastfeed my son exclusively. And so I had to rely on the education that I'd received and the support from my midwife, as well as the fact that I worked for Healthy Start during that time. So I had the best support system. Right. Had a husband who said, it's okay. I'll block Granny. I'll block Granny for you. I'll block Granny for you, and you go in here with the baby. So that was very helpful, but it took a look at all that support that I had to be able to stick to my decision to breastfeed. That was very important to me. It was important to my family. So I think having a support system, which is what our care coordinators do, so for an Healthy Start, we have care coordinators that go into the home and do home visiting with moms, new moms, moms who are throughout their pregnancy, we're working with them. And it's giving that education and that empowerment so that they know when they get in a situation where either it's your grandmother, your mom, your partner, anyone, the doctors and nurses who are saying something that is opposite of what you had intended to do, like breastfeeding or the nutrition and support for your baby around the co-sleeping issue. If you have someone who's saying something different, you have that empowerment and that strength to say, no, this is what I'm going to do. And that takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of stepping outside your comfort zone if you're not wanting to have that conversation with them. And, you know, when you first have a baby, it's a very tough time. You're asking yourself a lot of questions. Am I doing this right? Am I holding the baby right? Should I do this, you know, turn them this way? So there's a lot to learn in a short time period, but that's why we work with moms from inception. As soon as they find out they're pregnant, we're working with them in their homes, in the community, getting that message out to everyone in the community. So when you talk about issues like douching, people don't cringe. When you talk about the issue of co-sleep, because there are many different ideas around co-sleeping. Some say that it's great, some say that it's not great. We want to get that message across to everyone in the community that it's not safe. It's not safe. So that's what we're doing and having those sometimes uncomfortable conversations. I remember the douching and doing some training on staff to spread those messages out into the community because people don't want to talk about the pica eating. People don't want to talk about the cornstarch, especially if it's what my grandma said and what my mom said and what all of my aunts did. It's very uncomfortable. So we have to have those uncomfortable conversations in order to get to safe babies.
Sure. And that's, as you had said before, Dr. Fran, that's just human nature. That's not an exclusively racial thing at all, no. Because we all have our preconceptions. Absolutely. And if those preconceptions are generational and came down from Lord knows how long ago, it has a lot of power.
Oh, it does, especially as a new mom. And I guess the same thing, bringing my first baby girl home, it was hard because my mother didn't breastfeed me. And but she was waiting at my house, too. And so I had decided, you know, that I guess it was around my seventh month that I was going to do it because my doctor at the time said, this is the time to start thinking about it. And I think if you have in your mind, and I think we have to tell women that this is a good thing. And we get back to involving dads. My husband is such a proponent of breastfeeding. I breastfed all three of my girls for 2 years. And it was very hard because everyone in the family, like, you're still breastfeeding her? But all of the benefits that I knew about, high IQ, low, as far as obesity and diabetes, all of that, I wanted that for my girls. And my husband, he is such a proponent of it as well. And he'll tell any young person, if your wife or partner wants to breastfeed, please. And his thing was, we saved a whole bunch of money. But again, I had to educate him. And again, since it's around Father's Day, you know, men need to understand it is so important to support their partner, their wives, when it comes to breastfeeding, because she will need that. And if you support her, just think about the child that's going to grow up and be very healthy. So it's important that we involve dads in breastfeeding.
I see Glenn nodding his head right there.
Budget guy.
Yes.
And granddads, too, because, again, that generational thing, Glenn, when hard-charging type A personality, the women folk take care of the children, I bring in the money, and good little lad, run along now. And there was like this emotional gulf. My dad, who was sort of a Jack LaVine type, as a matter of fact, his whole thing was, honey, you've had him all day, my turn.
Nice.
And growing up, it was me and Dad. We had so much fun, and I miss that man to this very moment. But that is such an important component in boy babies, girl babies, dad's got to get in there and do it.
That's right.
Yeah. I just might add, when I came on the board for Healthy Start 4 years ago, that was one of my first comments was, you know, as a male, I want everybody to know that I believe it's very important for the men to be part of that birthing process as well as the part where you support your wife on doing the right thing for that child. And I just think it's very important as a Healthy Start coalition that we educate all the fathers and everybody. Because I think this day and age in particular, Tom, like you were saying, my dad was kind of a distant dad as opposed to yours. But I think today men, for the most part, are really wanting to be involved. But they have to be educated.
Right.
You know, in particular, we don't get educated because we're not talking to our moms about birthing or about babies. We're talking to dad about football and baseball. You know, so someone's got to come in and help us, you know, and get that education to us to be a real partner in the raising of that child and the birthing of that child.
Yes, it's not intuitive for us, so
no.
We need some help.
Yeah, and I one of my students and I did a study on breastfeeding in African American men, and we found that men that were breastfed tend to be more supportive because they got the support from their mother,
right.
From their aunts or other. I think we even asked other female relatives or, you know, something like that. So for the most part, if they are breastfed, they tend to be more supportive and more of an advocate for breastfeeding, more so than those men who did not. So we do see that gap that we do need to continue to educate men, especially with that aspect.
That physical contact, that touch is so critical at that age, that whole bonding thing.
And now, you know, I know at TMH we're trying to be a baby-friendly hospital, how they're doing that first touch where they're putting the babies on the mom's chest right away. And then the dads are also getting to experience that, you know, there's some really cute pictures out there where they have the dads that are having that first touch with the baby because that bonding. And dad can also be a part of the bonding experience with breastfeeding. I mean, there are ways that they're not actually nursing the baby, but they can be there to cuddle and soothe the baby as well to make it a family experience.
Members of the Capital Area Healthy Start Coalition and Dr. Fran Close from FAMU talking about early childhood development and hearing that maternal and paternal heart beat here when we're very young. We'll be right back with more on Perspectives. Well, hope you had a good Mother's Day and a good Father's Day upcoming, too, because the involvement of parents in the life of that new wee one is far more critical than I think any of us ever imagined. And that is what the latest research says. And that is what organizations like the Capital Area Healthy Start Coalition are designed to facilitate, to make sure that there is a better kickoff to that life. And that's why we have Tamika Smith, Executive Director, Glenn Robertson, who is President of the Board, and Dr. Fran Close from FAMU in the College of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences and the Behavioral Science and Health Education Division of the Institute of Public Health over there. So, and you'd mentioned the initial cost of a baby who does not get a healthy start, but what about the lingering impacts of that moving forward into adolescence and adulthood? What are some things, not just worst case scenarios, but what are some of the potential pitfalls we're looking at here? Tamika?
Well, when you look at babies who are born prematurely in the United States, the cost is about $16.9 billion in medical and healthcare costs for the baby. We're talking $1.9 billion in labor and delivery costs for the mom, $611 million for early intervention services, and then $5.7 billion in lost work and pay for people who were born prematurely. So the cost of prematurity, it skyrockets. It's just enormous for our community. And I know that one data point that we have is in 2016, there were 292 premature babies born in Leon County. And if you use the figure, the 55,000 that Glenn talked about, the medical cost for those families in that in our community for Leon was $16 million for just the first year of their baby's life. So it's very important. It's very costly. that when babies are born prematurely. And so it's very important for us to get in on the front end, starting in middle school. Like Fran said, it's faux pas. People don't like to talk and they don't want to hear preconception health. We're not saying you're ready to have a baby, but we're saying that you can start thinking about ways to have your body healthy starting in middle school. So we want to get that message out, the exercise, the nutrition, the checkups, you know, having that checkup once a year to make sure that your body is healthy is very important.
Well, it's tough because middle school kids are invincible.
Well, and teenagers are too. Teenagers yeah. are, and those, and you know, we did a focus group when I worked at Healthy Start back in 2009 with some young people, some high school students, and we said if we gave you, you know, five things that you could do now to keep your body healthy, would you do them? And they said we would do one. So we thought, well, we have to figure out which one is the most important. It's the easiest to do because this was before the iPhone and mm-hmm. the social media. And so their attention was a little bit easier for us to capture. Whereas now, you know, we probably would have to put it on Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat. We'd have to figure out a means to communicate whatever those messages are that are important for them to keep their body healthy before they get pregnant.
Oh, yeah. And what we're seeing here, especially with now juvenile diabetes and everything else, because we don't want you out in the neighborhood running around and having a good time. It is right. either too dangerous or you're going to get a splinter or right. whatever. So you stay inside, you stay on that screen so I know where you are. And meanwhile, you have 15-year-olds that are pushing 300 pounds.
Yeah. And we have to get the parents involved, especially at that middle school level. They're not required for physical education. Right. You know, it's an option, or you can opt out of physical ed now. So that's hard. We have to tell, you know, get the parents educated on keeping their kids healthy physically. And we can see, because if they have diabetes as a juvenile, then what happens later when they're an adult? It's going to get worse, but we need to stop, you know, prevent it before it actually happens. And when children understand that they can eat well and things taste good. So that's why we need the parents to cook things, you know, cook healthy for the children. Because if they at least try it, and that's what I tell my girls, you got to try it at least twice before you say you don't like it. So at least we, you know, need to make sure that they're eating well and exercising. And that involves both parents.
And that's why you have Chef Shaq on the board.
Exactly.
But that gets us even back to that discussion here of food deserts and everything else, which impact. And it is not a racial thing. There are many very affluent, predominantly white neighborhoods that you have to get in a car and drive to the supermarket because there's nothing within walkable distance.
Very true.
So there's a lot of work that we have to do on this, too, just across the board. Advocating investments in prevention, a vital community priority. What is that all about? That's something that Jack sent me. He said, be sure to ask these guys about that.
Well, our coalition is a part of, it's one of 32 coalitions for the Healthy Start across the state. And we have a state association, the Florida Association of Healthy Start Coalitions, that does advocacy on a statewide level. So we're pushing the message from Pensacola down to the Keys of the importance of investing very, very early in a child's life. So we're talking about middle school age, young people, getting them the message. But also, once that woman is pregnant, it's important to pour into her and to put resources into her across the state so that she has a healthy pregnancy and a healthy baby. It's time to address issues around racism and discrimination when it comes to women's experience, their prenatal care experience, when it comes to their experience within their communities around those issues, because we know that stress impacts the pregnancy and impacts that baby. So that's one of the things that the association does on a statewide level, is that advocacy push and that education piece across the state.
Okay. And Glenn, is there something, as it was envisioned with Governor Childs in the original iteration of this, a room to bring in the entire healthcare community on this so that they also are on board with all everyone singing off the same page of the hymnal here?
Oh, yeah. I was in my former life budget director for the state of Florida, and I worked with the different governors. And one of the most important things was to try to get the coordination of resources across cities and counties in the state to work together. So the point of looking at children from the birthing process all the way through teenage years, et cetera, there are many different organizations out here in our community that are focused on trying to help. And the key is to get them to coordinate. And that's the word coalition. The Healthy Start Coalition is very focused on making sure that we use our resources wisely. I mean, this involves tax money that comes from the state of Florida to all those coalitions, but it also involves private fundraising. So we have a combination. And we try to coordinate with the different groups that are dealing with children, for instance, to make sure that we do our part without duplicating something someone else is doing. So it's very important, I think, from government's perspective as well as the taxpayer perspective and individual families, that we know that there are a coalition of efforts to try to help.
Yeah, and sometimes developing those coalitions in and of themselves can be a challenge and we are not going there. This is not a political screed by any stretch, but the issue that propped up at the Leon County level of a children's issue, something or other funded with an expansion of the tax base, and again, we're not going to go there, but immediately there was this explosion of controversy surrounding that. So yes. I can see what you're dealing with there. Mm-hmm. And getting folks in a situation where you have diminishing resources mm-hmm. and everyone's fighting for every dollar, how do you get them all to work together and say, okay, let's put this competition on hold and pull together in one way?
We do need to get together. And one of the, I guess we can say, using your analogy of the hymnal, is that, you know, one page of the hymnal is the Healthy Start screening. And that's important that all new moms are, once they find out they're pregnant, they're going to their first visit, that they're filling those out and being honest about that. I was on the was appointed by the Florida Surgeon General to be on the redesign of that. And to get moms to understand the importance of doing that, but just making sure that we're capturing them, asking the right questions so that they are connected to all of these resources. The resources are important. I know, you know, we're talking about money too, but that part of the hymnal is very important. That starts the whole chorus because they have to fill that out and understand that if you score a certain score on that screen, then you will be immediately given information about Healthy Start so that we can help you from the beginning all the way through this baby's first few years of life.
And Tamika, dealing then again with some of those dynamics within the family, which is many of us have a tendency, something happens, we close up. And, you know, it's just us. And we don't want anyone else telling us what to do or where to go or how to do it or what we'll handle this ourselves.
Right.
And you've got to break that down a little bit.
We do. And that's why it's helpful to start when the woman's pregnant. So you get in early before the baby comes so that when issues come up, the care coordinators know and the families know, you have my number, you have my contact information. If this isn't a good time for you, we can stay in contact via telephone. We can stay in contact. You can meet me somewhere in the community. The level of intensity for Healthy Start services is dependent on the mom and her family and her situation. So as that changes, we have to change our approach, and that's what we do.
Mm-hmm. And that should be a really early intervention, like you said, Dr. Fran. As soon as you find out, you don't just, we'll wait and see if there's a problem.
Oh, no.
But that's the problem. and one of the things is that, you know, there's lots of research to talk about the importance of prenatal care. And, you know, we got to get them in there to fill out the screening first. But, you know, there's research to show that their African-American women tend to delay going in. So there's that first trimester when there's certain types of screening. I mean, you're screening for possible abnormalities in the fetus, and you're screening for diabetes, you know, the gestational diabetes. You're doing all these. So if you come at month 4 or month 5, you've missed those screenings. So now you may have to deal with the comorbidity issue of I have digestational diabetes that they could have caught or already had diabetes. Now it's worse because I'm pregnant. So it's important that, you know, the women know that it's important to do those screenings and get in.
It reminds me, Glenn, for the mail analog here, which is when the check engine light comes on in your car, you don't wait for it to go away. You better get it and find out what the heck's going on here.
Yes. That's right.
Right.
Yeah. It's time for an intervention.
Intervention.
Oh, yeah. And that's where, too, I think, again, if I could repeat, the role of the male or the family in helping in the birthing and the raising of that child. I know with my wife and I, sometimes you're sleepy when you're raising a baby.
A lot.
And you can see the importance of, especially for safe sleep practices. If in this case the mother is sleepy and just finds it convenient to have the child in the bed, the father should say, no, no. Honey. I think we should pick up that little baby and put him in this crib. You need two or more to help, I think, raise a child, to have him raise a child. And it's just important for the men as well as the families to support the mom and that baby.
Well, yeah, that is so, I think, for some people, so counterintuitive, like you were talking about the heartbeat scenario at TMH, that just seems so natural and so normal. And for many mothers, so needed. That this little bundle of love, just total acceptance, and maybe no one else in my life can understand me the way this little one can on some level.
That's true.
And you don't want to put him down. Mm-mm. And yet that could be fatal.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And for some families it is.
Yeah.
In our community.
Yes. And how do you break that? Because, again, that just seems human nature. That's what we do. We just hold those little ones so tight and drift off, and we're both together in dreamland. But that could be an absolute catastrophic ending there.
You know, and I think that's really part of the extraordinary role that the care coordinators play. You need someone to at least I do, remind me of what I should do sometimes. Eating or whatever. And so the care coordinator is there to constantly provide some good advice. And we have found out that pamphlets and brochures only go so far. The public service announcements only go so far. It's the trust that you build up in a person, whether it's a family member or a care coordinator, so that when they ask you to consider a certain practice, that they have credibility,
and they
have respect,
right.
And the person is more likely to do it.
Yeah.
We all need that.
Right.
Well, given the ongoing need, then, is there a need on the part of the Capital Area Healthy Start Coalition for more care coordinators, volunteers, any other help that you all need?
Absolutely. We definitely need more care coordinators. We have four currently. And one of our big pushes in this next year is looking for funding for a care coordinator focused on mental health so that we have a licensed mental health counselor that's going out. High five, Fran. That's going out and doing counseling with the moms in the homes, because we know that there's issues of trauma and stress that need to be addressed, and that most people don't report needing mental health issues or having mental health issues. It's very underreported. But the risk screen does ask that question.
It does.
The redesign does ask that question. And so we see from the risk screens that we get that there are moms who report feeling hopeless, needing some mental health counseling. So that's a big push for us in raising some funds to have care coordinators go into the home and do the counseling, as well as the healthy baby education, the healthy mom education, the safe house education in preparation for the baby. So that's one of our big pushes. We have a safe sleep campaign that we are in the beginning stages of, that will continue throughout this next fiscal year, getting that crib in as many places. If there are businesses, if there are churches, communities, anywhere that we can put that crib for a couple of weeks so that people are coming through and they see that message. It's been very well received at the library. They called asking for it again because lots of people, and it's interesting, I think we'll have to do some education and training with the staff at the library, because they had folks asking them questions. Well, I always slept with my baby in the bed with me. Why do I have to? So that's a big push for us in this next year as well.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it looks like there's a lot that's going to be going on here within the next year, and a more holistic approach. As it, you'd think it was a coalition or something.
Something like that. Yes.
Yeah.
Folks, only a few moments left here. Let's start with you, Glenn Robertson. Any final thoughts here as we head towards our denouement on today's program?
Well, I'd kind of like to emphasize the fact that Healthy Start services are available to all women in this community. Everybody has access to Healthy Start. And I just think it's very important to get that message out. One of the things that's a primary focus for me anyway is to start establishing a greater partnership with the faith community. I think there is an access to congregations. Everybody is – some people in that congregation are having babies. And I think we need the faith community and Healthy Start and other children's organizations to be able to – inform and educate and provide support to congregations, and that requires us to have a closer relationship with the faith community on getting this message out.
Okay.
So that's what I'm hoping for.
All right, Pastor, I hope you're listening on that. I hear our music starting to come up here, folks. So, again, Glenn Robertson, President of the Board of Directors, Capital Area Healthy Start Coalition, along with Executive Director Tamika Smith and Dr. Frank Close from Florida A&M University. Thank you for a lively and engaging and a very loving discussion today. Thank you so much for coming
on
Perspectives. Perspectives produced by WFSU in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Evan Rossi, Lydell Rawls on the internet and the phone connections. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week's program, hey, we're still baking this cake. It's being assembled even as we speak. The subject will just have to be a surprise, and we'll spring it on you next week right here on Perspectives. Have a good week.
Copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.